The Lou Truck Show is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network, home of the best podcasts like Byer Brown Tech and Stuff at bbtas.com and The Mike Tech Show at miketechshow.com. If it's tech, it's here. Please visit techpodcast.com.
Now establishing data link. Accessing.
I'm your resident Ferengi coming to you live from the FCA, Lou Costanzo. Hello. Welcome to the Lou Truck Show. A show is a show, we know, and no one can do a truck show, we know. That is, of course, unless the show is a famous Lou Truck Show. Just listen to the hosts we love the most, they'll give you a truck show that you'll endorse. We're always on a steady course, we're the Lou Truck Show. Podcast yakety yak, a streak, and waste your time with ads. But Lou Truck Show will never have a corporate master that gags. A show is a show, we know, but this one won't fade like a few, we know. You've never heard of a Star Trek show? Listen to this. We're the Lou Truck Show. Show number 69 for Thursday, September 23rd, 2010. Show. I'm your host, Lou. Thank you very much for downloading and listening to tonight's show. Our main webpage is www.loutrekshow.com. You can send us topic suggestions as well as questions and comments. Our email address is loutrekshow, and that is all one word, at gmail.com. Keep your email somewhat brief and to the point, and we will be putting them in as part of a future show. You can follow us on Twitter or Facebook by going to loutrekshow.com/Twitter or Facebook. Anything after the loutrekshow.com/... You can pretty much find, whether it be Twitter, Facebook, or MySpace, and I'm sure there are others. Just go to loutrekshow.com, and you'll see all the ways that you can either join the show or follow the show. And, of course, we do want people to join the show, especially on days like today. You know, I would like to have a backup guest host when my co-host is MIA, which he is again today, and I pretty much have a strict policy that if he's not ready or he doesn't come on, because let's face it, I'm going to be honest with you, World of Warcraft is a bitch, and a lot of people get so sucked up into this game that they absolutely lose control of their time, and they don't know what they're doing, they don't know where they're supposed to be at any given time, and that's happened to Brian in the past, and I have a feeling that's happened to him again, but we pretty much have an understanding that if the show time goes on, I wait a little bit, and right now I'm at 28 minutes past the time we were supposed to meet. I just go on and do a solo show. And when I do, as typical in the past, I generally take a season of Star Trek, a episode commentary, I do a review of the seasons, and today I'm going to go ahead and do a review of Deep Space Nine Season 2. And I'm going to jump into that in just a bit, but I do want to say a couple things. As I mentioned in the opening part there, Tech Podcast does have a lot of great shows. And as you know, we did a interview last week of Troy King from Bagel Tech Rage, and since then he has mentioned us at least once, maybe twice, and I want to thank him for that. It opens us up to a whole new area, and pretty soon you're going to hear me on Byer Brown Tech and Stuff at bbtas.com do my diatribe about Google Instant, and I'm going to reach out to Byer right now, because I know he listens to this show. Byer, you could play my voicemail I sent you, or you can have me come on live. Personally, I would like to come on live because there's also other things I want to talk about when it comes to internet safety and your children. Because there's another issue that I told you about, and this is something else that scared the bejeebies out of me. And because, you know, I'm going to give everybody a little hint. I really would rather you go to bbtas.com because it's a tech show and listen to what happened, but I'll give you a hint. Facebook is a great thing, but it can also be a pain in the butt. When it comes to your children and who they're talking to on Facebook, That's bad. When you find that your child's been talking to somebody somewhere across the nation, somewhere across the country, you get mad at that, especially when your child's 8 and this person is well into adulthood, even claims to be a proud grandpa. When you find out your child's talking to that person, your blood boils, okay? But when you find out that person is in the city you live in, all of a sudden, it doesn't boil so much as it does start to shake with fear of what she's done. So that's what we're going to talk about. So again, I'm reaching out to Byer Brown. Byer, I'll play my voicemail on a future BBTAS or have me come on, because there are things that we need to really get into when it comes to child safety online. And now, you know, it's too bad that Brian isn't here today, because I think he would have loved the Mr. Ed intro. That was one of those things that I was at work today, and I was just, all of a sudden it hit me. Mr. Ed, I don't know why it hit me, but it did. And I thought, wouldn't it be funny if I took the words to Mr. Ed and changed them around for the Lou Trek Show? And that's what I did. So, that was a lot of fun. I don't know if I'm going to do a lot of that, because quite frankly, I hate my singing voice, and I believe I've got bronchitis still, so as you can tell, I sound terrible. I thought about just kind of postponing the show and giving Brian another chance to come on, but I just want to push on. Anyway, let's go on to the reminders that Starbase Indie is coming pretty much at the end of November, the weekend after Thanksgiving, which is my busiest weekend of the year, and I've been teetering on whether I can go or not go, and right now, I'll be honest with you, it's not in the budget. I need to do more important things like clothes for my daughter, clothes for my wife, heck, clothes for me. Those are more important, and I think after those things are done, if we have something left over that we can throw away for fun, then I'll go to Starbase Indy, but right now, I'll be honest, it's not looking good. But the Loot Trek Show will be represented in the form of our co-host, Brian. And don't forget, it's going to be at the Indianapolis Marriott East. It's the 15th generation of Starbase Indy. And the guest on tap for this year happened to be Tim Russ, who we interviewed a few weeks ago. Ethan Phillips, which we've been trying to interview forever. And I don't know if Tim Russ ever reached out to him, or if Scarlett did, or if Manu did, but they were all going to reach out to Ethan, and haven't heard anything. Also, Manu Interame, who we did interview, oh, that was a fun interview, wasn't it? Deborah Downey, David Reddick, and the musical guest, 5-Year Mission, who we also interviewed a couple weeks back. So, get your tickets for Starbase Indie. I believe they're going to be $35. So go, you know, it's for the whole weekend. Keep in mind now, right now, if you're listening to the show before October 1st, which you will be, you got about 7 days, you could save $5 on that and pay only $30. But after October 1st, the prices will go up to, as I said, $35, and at the door, or the weekend of the convention, they go up to $40. Obviously, the later you get your tickets, the more work they have to do to print up your badge and so on, so that's why it's going to cost a little bit more. And let's face it, the week of the convention, these people have so much going on that they just don't have time to be printing up badges for people who postponed. Now, as I said before, I don't know if I'm going. I'll know a week before, so that's okay. I'm going to pay the $35 and not the $30, but that's the way it is. That's assuming I can even go. And they need you. They want you. They're trying to do their best, because if people don't show up, these stars are not going to want to go to these conventions. And there goes Starbase Indy. And let me tell you, this kind of a convention over other conventions like Trekfest or even the one in California or Las Vegas, this is fan-run. This isn't corporate. This is fan-run. And so the fans are the ones that actually are getting these people here. And Starbase Indy is run by Kim Huff, who is a dedicated diehard fan. So I think that's important that you understand that when you go to pay for your tickets or for when you decide which convention you would rather attend, is that they are fan-run. So please get your tickets in for Starbase Indy and get ready for it. So let's go ahead and jump into the show. And if you've heard my reviews, you know my reviews generally get a little bit crazy. Not crazy, but I like to give my opinion. And a disclaimer, I've had some people write to me and tell me that I must not like Star Trek very well for some of the things I say. And that's not true at all. I love Star Trek. I just like to point out little craziness like, why would they do something like whatever? It makes no sense. But I do love Star Trek, so don't ever think otherwise. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to play for you the trailer to Deep Space Nine Season 2 Episode 1. It's called The Homecoming. And then I'll give a little bit about what I think about the show after the trailer.
A dangerous mission.
I can't loan you a Starfleet runabout without knowing where you plan on taking it.
To Cardassia 4 to rescue a Bajoran prisoner of war.
If we don't leave now, Major, we never will.
To rescue a reluctant hero.
They still need you. But I am not the man that they think I am.
Exposes a secret society.
They call themselves the Circle.
That threatens to destroy the Alliance. Next time on Star Trek Deep Space Nine.
If they call themselves the Circle, and they're a bunch of jerks, could you call them a circle? I need to think about that one just a wee bit longer. Okay, but anyway, as you could tell, Kieran Reese had to run off and try and save somebody. Who did she try to save? Of course, none other than Lee Nallis. He happens to be a very good friend of Kieran Reese, so of course loyalty is going to take her and to save him from the Cardassians. And of course, he's such a hero, he comes back. What do the Bajorans do? They give him a very high position. But what position do you possibly give a hero like him? Well, how about Navark? So you may ask yourself, what's a Navark? We don't know. I mean, it's just one of those things. He's not paid very well, I guess, but he's a Navark. And so he does whatever the prophets call him to do. And I got to tell you, this is one thing about Deep Space Nine that bothers me. Like, how about Kai Winn? Whenever she wanted her way, and let's face it, she was a backstabbing little beehive. Whenever she wanted her way, what did she say? Oh, it's the prophets. The prophets wanted me to do this. If the prophets want me to be powerful and rule millions and bring out the Pa-wraiths, obviously it was the prophets, the real prophets. So the prophets we used to pray to, well, they're not real prophets. These prophets, well, that's a different series, season, I'm sorry, different season altogether. So let's forget that. Has nothing to do with Lee Nallis. But anyway, of course, he will do whatever the Bajorans like him to do. So, how about if we went on to another one? Please, please, please. Odo, save me.
Kira is forced to resign.
What do you want me to do, Odo?
Fight for what you want!
Now she's a pawn in a rebel plot.
How can you betray your own government?
We are all patriots, Commander.
But who's really behind this devious plan?
Where would the Circle be getting so many weapons?
What will the Federation do?
We gotta leave.
If we withdraw, we'll be giving Bajor and the wormhole back to them.
Next time on Star Trek Deep Space Nine.
Oh, the memories come back to me. See, the Circle thing. Remember that, as it turns out, Minister Jarrow was the one who was actually in charge of this. And what he does, just at the end of the last episode, was relieve Kira of her duties and put the new Navark as the liaison to the Federation. And what does Kira do? Well, she goes back to Bajor, takes up roommates with Vedic Barayal, and so to speak, and he introduces her to her first orb experience, which happens to be of him and her in a liaison of their own. And she's almost mortified by it, I would imagine, but anyway, as it turns out, Minister Jarrow reveals himself to her, and so they have to try and save Deep Space Nine, save Bajorn from these evil circle. I almost said it again. Jerks. These jerks that are in the circle. Yeah. And then he spills over to the next episode. Number 3 of Deep Space Nine, Season 2.
The Bajorans are taking back the station.
I wouldn't blame anyone for getting out now while you can.
Come with us.
We cannot just let the Cardis have the wormhole.
Sisko and the crew prepare for the final battle.
How can you sit and wait for them to attack?
Dead is a martyr. Live, he seals our victory.
Now, a dangerous mission may be the last hope.
We'll never outrun them in this.
You're right. Just point at them and fire.
In preventing an all-out war on the next episode of Star Trek Deep Space Nine.
Remember this, Federation. Remember it well. No good deed ever goes unpunished. You help the Bajorans, you take care of them so the bloody Cardis can't have them back. And what do? They almost kill you. They try to take over the station because the circle... I gotta get that off my head. These people in the circle decide that Bajor for Bajorans only. You know, I think the Federation should have just given them what they want and then let them realize what the mistake they made. Then they can let him come back. Which, of course, they end up doing because Minister Jarl is a bad guy, and we're not exactly sure. You can't prove that Vedic Wynn had anything to do with it, but you certainly know that her and Minister Jarl were probably, I like to call it now, liaisoning with each other. So that was 3 episodes of The Circle, and those poor Bajorans and what they went through because they were just so confused. And now, a question came out of this next episode. My question is, before I play this trailer, is how many spots does Dax have on her body? Well, in this episode, we came close to finding out.
A desperate outcast plots the ultimate theft.
Either you help me, or you and your friends will die.
The life force within Dax.
He's come to steal my symbiont.
Now to save her shipmates.
I don't want anyone else hurt because of me.
Will she make the ultimate sacrifice?
Forgive me.
Put the symbiont back where it belongs.
I can't do that.
This woman is dying and I need your help to save her.
On the next episode of Star Trek Deep Space Nine.
Boy, I tell you, that Klingon sure looks familiar to me. Let's see here. As I run through memoryalpha.org. Aha, that's what I thought. I remember when we were setting up for the Tim Russ interview, we went through some of the things he was on, and that's when we found out he actually played the Klingon in this little band of rebels who come aboard the station and try and steal the symbiont from Dax. And, of course, they were successful. Why couldn't they be? They're like 4 people that were able to take out the station. Oh, that's right. The whole crew was off the station because of a ion storm that was coming through. And that's why they had to have a skeleton crew. But then again, so did the Rebels. They had a skeleton crew, too. Well, it's a battle of the skeleton crews. Unfortunately for Dax, she lost in the beginning. So the symbiont was taken out of Dax, was placed into this goofball who then tried to become Sisko's best friend. Only it didn't work. And, of course, as usual, Sisko was able to talk the other bad guys into turning against him, specifically the girlfriend. What do you think's going to happen when he merges with that symbiont? Varad has no idea what he's doing, right? All he wants is a symbiont. He has no idea what's going to happen. Of course, he changes just like usual. And here's another question for you. What's the deal with Quark? How many times does Quark have to go against rules? How many times does he put people in jeopardy? Why don't they kick his ass out the nearest airlock? At least put him on a ship and send him off to Ferenginar with the instructions of never coming back. It's crazy how many times he's almost gotten people killed because of his illegal activities or because he just, profit. He had to earn his latinum, and it almost cost Dax her life. So, not good. So, let's go on to the next one. This one is called, by the way, this is episode 5 of season 2, called Cardassians.
When the war is over, hatred may be all that remains.
You are a Cardassian butcher.
And prejudice can last a lifetime.
Cardassians are suggesting that the Bajorans are raising these orphans to hate their own people.
In matters of politics and power.
I was ordered to leave them behind.
Children may be the silent victims.
We torture for that boy living like that.
Have you come to take us back to Cardassia?
On the next episode of Star Trek Deep Space Nine.
Oh, boy. Dr. Bashir and Garak, who are still battling the wits with each other, trying to figure out who's going to make the other break, they're sitting at the Replimat having dinner when all of a sudden this guy and a Cardassian boy comes in. And, of course, Garak, who's probably a molester in real life. Not the actor, I said Garak. Okay, get real, people. Anyway, Garak, who's probably some molester, said, "Ooh, Cardassian boy. Hello, my son," as he puts his hand on the boy's shoulder. "Maybe I can get you to bite me." Well, he does. He bites him, but it's not exactly the bite he wanted, but it's the bite he got. Okay, now we need to find out what we're going to do with this poor little lad. Are we going to return him to the father he never knew, or to the Bajoran who's raising him on Bajor? What a strange situation. The Bajorans were occupied by the Cardassians. And of course, when the Cardassians left, here's the deal. The Cardassians, while they were occupying Bajor, a lot of them did what a lot of the servicemen did in places like Vietnam. All these guys that were in Vietnam, a lot of them married, having extramarital affairs with women in Vietnam, had children from these women in Vietnam. Well, when the Cardassians were there, they of course had Bajoran women who, just to stay alive, would bed these men, these Cardassian soldiers, and of course, some of them had children, but when the Cardassians pulled out, they didn't take the children with them, they left them. So there was a lot of half-Bajoran, half-Cardassian children living on Bajor that were abandoned, and this kid happened to be one of them. So the guy, of course, brings him to the Bajoran space station, where he has the misfortune of meeting Garak, and then now we have to figure out what we're going to do. Are we going to let this guy take him? And in the end, of course, I don't want to tell you the end. I'm going to let you decide to watch the end. So let's go on to our next episode, which is called Malora. And this is what you can get when you make the station ADA compliant, because that's the law, and that's what you should do to help this person get around. But of course, no good deed goes unpunished. Gratitude is a wonderful thing, but not to her.
In a world of insurmountable odds,
I am not comfortable sending you alone into the Gamma Quadrant.
A Starfleet officer struggles to survive.
No one can understand until they sit in the chair.
Now, a revolutionary procedure.
I can lift my leg.
Your neural pathways begin to adapt.
Could be the key to a whole new future.
This would mean real independence.
But at what price?
I'm not going ahead with the treatments.
On the next episode of Star Trek Deep Space Nine.
Have you ever heard of the Florence Nightingale effect, where doctors or nurses fall in love with their patients? And this is one of those cases for poor, old, lonely, haven't had any in a while, Dr. Bashir, poor devil, gets this new lady on named Malora, whose race is used to a atmosphere it's not so much zero gravity, but where the gravity on the space station is horrifying to her. It's almost like she's being squashed into this chair because gravity is beating the hell out of her body. So what did she do? She joined Starfleet. That doesn't make any sense to me, because, I mean, how did she possibly get through the academy? There's got to be a lot of physical activity in the academy. Or did they let her go because she had a disability? And it's not so much a disability. She's perfectly able-bodied. It's just that her gravity level in her native world is different than the one on the space station. But they have to adapt for her. And I guess as well they should. But I can't understand why she had such a hard time when she was able to pass the academy. And of course, you know, she's halfway cute, in a sense. And Dr. Bashir just can't help himself. Well, you know, that's Dr. Bashir. Look how many times he should have been busted for sexual harassment against Jadzia Dax. But that never happened. So, and he points a few things out for her, you know. Ooh, what a shot. She likes to make those shots. And he humbles her in a way. But, you know, we never see her again. So I'm assuming that she either went back to her own world, or she's now serving on the half-gravitational ship. We don't know. So let's go on to the next one, which is called Rules of Acquisition. Interesting that we finally get into these rules. And let's thank Armin Shimmerman, I believe his name is, who played Quark, for making us realize or understand what these rules of acquisition really are.
A Ferengi will do anything for profit.
I've waited my whole life for an opportunity like this.
He'll go to any lengths.
It never hurts to suck up to the boss!
To get what he wants.
This is not about profit anymore, it's about love!
For the reward...
That's a lot of land.
...is always worth the risk.
I should have killed you back on that station.
Or is it?
You're a woman?
It's a female!
Next time on Star Trek Deep Space Nine.
God forbid we actually get a female. And this is the opposite of what I was saying in the last show. I'm sorry, the last episode, where Melora was actually getting ADA compliance on the station. The Ferengi, on the other hand, have absolutely no idea what the sexist revolt is all about in the world here on Earth. They have no idea that women can work outside the home, that women can wear clothing. You know, I'd sure love to... Oh, wouldn't it be a frightening thing to have happen for a Ferengi to come to Earth and meet a female LAPD officer and say, "Oh, a clothed female!" Oh, I'd love to see what she did. Pull out the ass, jack him upside the head, take him down with her cuffs. Oh, no! I can just imagine what that's going to be like. And, of course, one of the best Ferengi in this episode happens to be a woman who... looks like a man. I don't know, man. She looks like a man. But and, of course, when they find out she's a woman, they don't rip her clothes off because that wouldn't be appropriate. How's that going to go over the air? We actually do see a naked female Ferengi, but we only see her from the mid-chest up. And of course, that was Quark's mother. And what we do see makes me say, no thank you. I don't want to see the rest. Now, I got a feeling that the woman... underneath all that was pretty hot, which I probably may or may not be interested in seeing. But from what we saw of her, no, I don't think I could live on Ferenginar with naked women running all over the place. Not if they look anything like Quark's mother. You've got to admit it there, boy! Anyway, so let's go on to the next episode. This is number 8, called Necessary Evil.
Odo investigates a bizarre murder from his past.
I'm the murderer.
Where Kira is the prime suspect.
There, that's her.
Now he must choose between loyalty...
I have no intention of being a Cardassian agent.
Don't push me, Odo.
Sooner or later, you're gonna have to choose whose side you're on.
And justice.
Yes, I lied about my alibi. That doesn't make me a killer.
On the next episode of Star Trek Deep Space Nine.
You know, a little less than I hate Mirror Universe episodes are episodes that go back in time that pretend that these people don't know each other or just meet each other for the first time after they've already done a whole season together. They can't act. You can't act that way. Maybe it's because we see them in the present for 30-some episodes. And then they try and go back in time to where either they just met or there was a different thing going on, such as this, where there was a murder of a Cardassian and a Bajoran was a suspect. And as it turns out, they thought it was Kira. Kira and Odo go up against each other, sort of in a way, in the past. And, of course, they come back to the future, and it makes things a little bit hairy. So, of course, Kira was involved, and she had something to do, part of the underground that had something to do with the explosion. But does Odo turn her in? twist the screws or anything? No. It's his future girlfriend. You kidding me? Why would he do that? So let's go on to number 9. And this is a bizarre one. I didn't get the gist of this one at all.
Cisco meets a mysterious woman.
Tell me all about yourself.
Who captures his heart.
I love you, Benjamin.
But where did she come from?
There is no record of anyone matching the description you gave me.
And what is she hiding?
I'm not reading any cellular structure.
Is she real?
I need answers, Dax.
What is the secret of her strange existence?
Commander, obviously you have mistaken me for someone else.
On the next episode of Star Trek Deep Space Nine.
All right, well, you know, we start out in this episode with the captain's personal log that he finally realizes why he's had trouble sleeping the last few nights, because yesterday was the 4th anniversary of the massacre of Wolf 359 and the 4th anniversary of Jennifer's death. And, you know, he's not sure what bothers him more, the date itself or the fact that it almost passed unnoticed. I'd have to say both, actually. More the fact that it passed unnoticed. How could he possibly forget the 4th anniversary of Jennifer's death? That's just bizarre. I mean, I could see, I could understand if he'd met someone else, but he hasn't. But now he meets this mysterious stranger, and he's trying to get people to meet her, but for some strange reason, she keeps disappearing, and I mean literally disappearing. And when she does come back, you know, hey, where'd you go? Oh, hey, it's no big deal. I better not ask that question because I don't want you to answer. I'm trying to get in good with you. But, and then he meets another woman, and it's her. But she says she doesn't have any clue who she is, who he is. So, in the end, you know, he didn't find himself a girl. Who knows about Fena? Fena may be real. Fena may not be real. Whatever. But she's gone now. So, you know, I think we should just go on because you could probably tell I'm stammering because I'm not exactly sure about this one. I really didn't like it very much, to be honest with you. So let's go on to
Kira befriends a ship of alien refugees.
They're experiencing their first taste of freedom.
They're on a desperate search for their birthright.
Kentana is the legendary home of the Skeens.
A search that leads to Bajor.
Kentana is your planet.
Now Kira's torn between their people and her own.
Bajor simply cannot absorb 3 million refugees.
I thought we were welcome here.
On the next episode of Star Trek Deep Space Nine.
Oh, does anybody see the parallels in this episode to what's going on today politically with illegal immigration? It's amazing the parallels. Okay, now let's think about this. The Skreens believe Katana is actually Bajor. And I'm trying to remember if they left there 1.5 billion years ago or not. But anyway, they just want a little section of land where they could just be farmers, or they can do whatever they're doing. Now, the reason why I say this, like, political parallels is we have the same thing going on, and I'm not going to get into a political debate over illegal immigration, but I do want to say that, you know, bring us your hungry masses, your yearning to be free, and, you know, what happened to that? And but the problem is, I mean, in a sense, even I'm a descendant of immigration. My grandfather came across on the boat from Sicily, so I mean, do I deserve to be here because of that? But I think the difference is, you know, my grandfather did it the right way. Became a citizen by whatever was needed and necessary at the time. Now, the Skreens, you know, like I said, they just want a little bit of land. Think about what we're going through on illegal immigration on a global scale, the whole planet. Of course, the Skreens say that they don't want them to support them. They just want to be left alone where they can farm and hunt and fish and maybe do whatever they're going to do. But let's face it, the first big winter that Bajor has, the Skreens are going to need help. And you know that's going to happen. The Bajorans are going to have to take care of the Skreens. They're going to have to feed them. They're going to have to educate them. They're going to have to keep them safe. And that just, it just can't work out. So I kind of agree with the Bajorans on this one. They just can't take 3 million Skreens. Now, one thing about this episode, and I've said in the past that Trek Fest was an eye-opening adventure for me, and that Walter Koenig was something of a jerk. Kind of like, not so much the way he treated us, but his demeanor, the look on his face of disdain when Brian was talking to him, it just kind of, it irritated me. Okay. However, his son played in this one, Sanctuary. We're talking about Andrew. He played one of the screens, and he did a pretty good job. And I'm still sad that Andrew decided to take his own life. I wish it hadn't happened. But I just want to put that out there that he was in this episode. So let's go on to the next one, number 11, and this is called Rivals. This is what happens if you allow the competition.
Quark's greedy empire is threatened.
Welcome to Club Martis.
When a shrewd competitor sets up shop.
He can't do this. I have an exclusive contract.
And tries to put him out of business.
Martis is cutting into my profits.
Now, can he con the con man?
My benevolence is known far and wide.
Or as Quark met his match.
He'll be in profit by the end of the week.
On the next episode of Star Trek Deep Space Nine.
Oh, wow. How could I have said a couple episodes back that Quark should have been banned from the space station, sent out an airlock, what have you? And then on this episode, did we not all root for Quark? Did we not try to get Martis out of the promenade? He's a con artist. He comes in, he tries to con some little old lady. But actually, as it turns out, she was conning him. That was awesome. Don't you just... I mean, I've always wanted to take this 419 scam, these letters I get from Nigerians or people claiming to be my lost relative, my uncle Zadimir Costanzo, an Italian descent, was in Nigeria and was a president of a Nigerian bank, and he died, and he left a quarter of a bazillion dollars, and all I've got to do is, you know, to send them a few thousand here, a few thousand there, a few thousand here. You don't know how much I would love to just turn that around on somebody. But I guess that won't work. But in this case, it did work, and the lady was able to con him out of it. And so he tries to set up shop across another gambling parlor, but it's messing up the station. I don't know, it's doing something to the wormhole. You know, we're about ready to fly into the wormhole or something until they finally realize what's going on in Odo and Sisko, I believe, or one of them, or both of them, go into this place and start shooting the games off. So, check it out. It's called Rivals. And let's go on to the number 12th episode of Deep Space Nine Season 2, and this is called The Alternate. Do you remember on Star Trek The Next Generation, an episode called The Defector with Admiral Jarok, who comes aboard the Enterprise to warn them of a secret offensive against the Federation from the Romulans? Well, the guy, James Sloan, also played there as well. He played Admiral Aladar Jarok on The Defector. Interesting enough, he also played a Klingon on the Next Generation episode called Firstborn. He played the future Alexander Rozhenko, and then he even played Dr. Tetrell on Star Trek Voyager as the guy who created the Metrion Cascade. But anyway, he plays in this one as Odo's daddy, I guess you can call, Mora Paul, Dr. Mora, who's the guy who was assigned to find out what Odo was. You know, unknown sample.
Odo is on a search for his past.
Dr. Mora thinks he may have discovered the origin of my people.
A perilous journey that leads to a startling discovery.
I think I may have found what we're looking for.
Now, an evil life force is loose on the station.
Intruder, alert!
Where the hell did it come from?
But is Odo trying to find it?
I'll be running the investigation.
Or protect it?
What do you think they'll do with you?
On the next episode of Star Trek Deep Space Nine.
Or is Odo it? I believe, wasn't Odo the suspect in this one? Oh, spoiler alert. Anyway, I believe Odo was a suspect in this one. So anyway, this is where we find out that the origin of the name Odo was actually another name for unknown sample, if I remember correctly. So they try to figure out the origin of Odo's planet only to come back with a few sand crystals, and I guess that turned out on some psychotic nut job. So let's go on to the next one, because I'm at about 44 minutes now. This is called Armageddon Game.
Bashir and O'Brien help an alien race destroy a dangerous biological weapon.
I've never seen an anabiogenic weapon so resistant.
Only to become the next victims.
You've been infected by the harvesters.
Now they must fight for their lives.
We have only one chance to survive this thing.
And that's to stay alive long enough for Commander Sisko to find us.
But is it a struggle they're doomed to lose?
My legs. I can't feel them.
Are you saying both of my officers are dead?
On the next episode of Star Trek Deep Space Nine.
I believe this is going to be the third time this episode I've said no good deed goes unpunished. Of course, they're helping these people get rid of these harvesters. And, of course, they don't want anybody to have any information about this, so they try to kill them. And they tell the Federation, well, we didn't know. Something happened. Something must have got loose, and they died. Just all of a sudden, blank, disappeared. And everybody thought, well, that must be what happened. That seems odd, but... Well, I guess because we see it on the video that they just blank disappeared. Poor guys, they're gone. And of course they weren't. But in the time, poor Miles O'Brien got a little bit of the harvester on his arm and he starts to die from it. But don't worry, I'm sure that they're going to take care of it. Episode 14, Whispers.
O'Brien awakens to a station full of strangers.
Not one of them was real.
Where nothing seemed normal.
All I could think of was that this was not my Kanko.
And friends.
They got to you.
Act like enemies.
All right, let's have a little talk.
Who the hell are you?
Has a mysterious force taken over the crew?
Just surrender to them and you'll be fine.
Or is O'Brien losing his mind?
Turn the ship around and go back.
On the next episode of Star Trek Deep Space Nine.
Now, O'Brien thought, well, this is strange. What the hell happened to these people? There's something wrong. Are they all changelings? Well, no, they didn't know about changelings then. But, I mean, are they all androids, robots? What's wrong with these people? And as it turns out, O'Brien was the one who was not right. And, of course, they didn't know what was going on with him, so they couldn't tell him very much. And so that's what created this craziness inside of O'Brien's head. So, let's head on to the next one, number 15. This is called Paradise.
Sisko and O'Brien are captured by a strange cult.
Put your hands up!
Ruled by an obsessed leader.
Sometimes fate delivers us exactly where we need to be.
Now, with no way to escape,
I get the distinct impression she expects us to be here for a while.
They must join.
You'll have to do things our way.
Or perish.
You were willing to let them die for your theories.
On the next episode of Star Trek Deep Space Nine.
And now this is the reason why I named my daughter Alexa instead of Alexis. This woman, this bitch was crazy. As it turns out, she marooned these people who had no idea that she did it, just so she can live out her fantasies of, I don't know what she was thinking. Just, I guess, the old ways, no electricity. We don't need no radio, no stinking radio. Ben, you'll lose your ways if you just get out of that uniform. Oh, please. This was crazy, and of course they put people in the punishment box. This they couldn't even make it out of plastic. No, it's got to be metallic. So that way it takes the heat and just blows it up 10 times. And they almost kill the poor guy, Steven, I believe his name was, in this penalty box. And, oh, what a crazy episode. But don't worry, Dax, she saves the day. Kira and Dax, that is. And so they beam them up. After Sisko finds the duotronic blocker or whatever it was that was causing the phasers and the communicators not to work, he finds it. They find him. Everyone finds happiness. So let's go on to the next one, number 16, Shadow Play.
It comes without warning, abducting their people.
I've got 22 people who've disappeared.
22 missing people.
One by one.
The last victim vanished 6 hours ago.
Without a trace.
Mother's never coming back, is she?
Without a clue.
This colony is undergoing a serious crisis.
Can Odo and Dax solve the mystery before they vanish forever?
This village will cease to exist.
On the next episode of Star Trek Deep Space Nine.
almost like they were on the holodeck, and the holodeck characters just were disappearing, wasn't it? Oh, that's right, they were. Yes, this whole colony were holograms. Of course, the one guy created it all, and none of the little holograms, especially the cute little hologram, as she was so afraid that she was going to die. Oh, ain't that so cute. And, of course, now they don't tell. I don't believe they told these people when they brought them back online that they were actually holograms. I think they just went on about their lives, and that must be the prime directive. Don't tell holograms that they're actually holograms, because that would be interfering, and we don't do that around here. So let's go on to the next one, number 17. This is called Playing God.
A microscopic universe threatens to destroy the station.
As it grows, it's displacing our own universe.
In 2 minutes, this thing is going to expand.
While a startling discovery...
I found indications of life.
...poses a disturbing dilemma.
It's us or them. We have to destroy it.
You can't just wipe out a civilization.
Now their fate is in the hands of a young recruit.
You're talking about precision flying through a wormhole.
On the next episode of Star Trek Deep Space Nine.
Well, I mean, what are you going to do? You going to save yourself, or are you going to save the little alien kittens, or whatever you could call them? All right, so anyway, we start with Arjun, A-R-J-I-N, I believe his name is Arjun. He was a Trill initiate. He was looking to get joined, and Dax is the fear of his life, because she's going to decide whether he should get joined or not, or at least whether he should go on to the next phase. And I don't know, I guess they take great pride in torturing poor initiates, but she didn't really do that to him. But she, you know, she just wanted him to be himself and show her what he's made of. But then comes this parasite, this proto-universe that's about ready to take over their universe, and they're going to have to fix it. So, can he do it? What do you say? Is it possible? Well, obviously they do, but it doesn't make him fit to be a join Trill, unfortunately. Go back to the end of the line and try again. Next one is Profit and Loss.
Quark rekindles a passionate affair.
I love you, Quark.
But now she's a fugitive on the run.
I'm part of the Cardassian Underground.
And as the enemy prepares to attack...
They're powering up the forward disruptors.
Shields, lock on phasers and photon torpedoes.
He'll risk everything for her.
Following me will only get you killed.
I'll take that chance.
You see to it that they don't leave this station alive.
On the next episode of Star Trek Deep Space Nine...
Oh, I think Garak was starting to get into his role as his super Cardassian double agent spy thingy guy from the Obsidian Order starts to come out in his face. You could see it in his face. But anyway, of course, Quark, the studly man, first he gets this Cardassian babe somehow, and I don't know how I can use those two words in the same sentence, but I did, and then later he gets a Klingon babe, which is a lot more acceptable than this Cardassian babe was. But anyway, so he rekindles his flame as she's a wanted criminal who they're going to destroy the station to get at her. And, of course, the Federation, being the wonderful guys they are, they're going to take and protect Quark's girlfriend, Quark, the guy who's tried to kill them several times over again for Latinum, and protect her. So, ain't they great? This is why you want to be in the Federation. So let's go on to number 19. And this is called Blood Oath. We see what Jadzia.
You can't expect me to stay here and not avenge my own godson's murder.
Dax joins a band of Klingon warriors.
Come and fight with us.
On a mission of vengeance.
I took a blood oath to avenge his death.
Now she'll turn her back on Starfleet.
What about the laws of the Federation?
And risk her life.
It is a good day to die.
In a battle to the death.
Get them!
On the next episode of Star Trek Deep Space Nine.
Of course, not her death. Not this time, not this way. Of course, Dax is going to go on this blood oath to avenge her godson. And does she do it? Well, of course she does. I mean, come on. She's Curzon Dax. She may be cute. She may be little. But she's not frail. Forget it. And, of course, when you go against the Federation, they'll have your head on a platter until the end of the episode when they gladly accept you back with them. Maybe reprimand in your file or whatever, but such is the case in this one. Now we go into one of the enemies of the Federation that came about in one of the last seasons of The Next Generation, and we're talking about the Maquis. Here we go. We pull the Maquis in. Number 20.
A band of Starfleet renegades threatens to sabotage the peace.
Do you deny that the Federation is engaging in organized terrorist activities?
And spark an explosive conflict.
So they don't have a right to defend themselves?
They've crossed the line.
Now, Sisko must expose the engineers of this devious plan.
They've managed to start their own little war out here.
Or face a full-scale attack.
I just know they have to be stopped.
On the next Star Trek Deep Space Nine.
Yes, but why does the Federation have to stop them? Why is it the Federation's role to stop the Maquis? They're going up against the Cardassians. The Federation is able to prove these people are not part of the Federation. Once they turn their back on the Federation, they're on their own. Leave them alone. Why are we going after them? And, of course, we have Sisko's best friend, Captain Hudson Calvin, played... not Captain, Lieutenant Commander Calvin Hudson, played by Bernie Casey, who... finds himself on the wrong side, and he joins the Maquis. Now, here's the thing. Now, once he did that, okay, he gave up his oath to the Federation. So now we have a problem. Should we let him go, or should we hunt him down and put him on trial, court-martial him? So there's a dilemma. On the one hand, the people who were not really members of the Federation but found themselves in the Cardassian border that are now revolting against the Cardassian. If they were not members of the Federation or they were not Starfleet officers, leave them alone. It's not your fight. But, of course, Ben Sisko ain't going to do that. So he goes after the Maquis, and we go into the next episode, which is part two of the Maquis.
On the brink of war.
The situation in the demilitarized zone is deteriorating rapidly.
With nowhere else to turn.
Put down your weapons.
Shoot them!
As ally becomes enemy.
We're in a war here, and I intend to win it. You'll have to get through me first.
Sometimes the only solution...
Will you help me stop the Maquis? You have a deal.
...is to join the other side on the next Star Trek Deep Space Nine.
And it's not the side you may think. Ben Sisko goes on the side of the Cardassians. Now, I got a question for you. Commander Hudson, he obviously turned against him, the Federation, as a member of the Maquis. And then, of course, another one does. Remember Commander Eddington? What is it with the Federation? Do they not know how to vet these people a little bit better? I mean, couldn't they come up with a psychological profile that would screen these people to think maybe they were part of the Maquis, they had Maquis sympathies going on inside them? It's amazing how so many people are able to take over starships, they're able to beam off ships, they're able to steal runabouts, they're able to be part of the Maquis right under the Federation's nose. It's simply amazing. So let's go on to number 22, because we are starting to run out of time. This is called The Wire.
A deadly addiction to a mind implant.
It was designed to stimulate the pleasure centers of my brain.
How long has it been on?
2 years.
Threatens Bashir's Cardassian friend.
Garrick's body has undergone a severe shock.
Leaving it in could drive him insane.
Get away from me!
But removing it could kill him.
He's dying.
Then you should let him die.
On the next Star Trek Deep Space Nine.
Wow, let him die. That sounds like fatherly advice, doesn't it? Of course, the guy who said, let him die, was his father. Isn't that wonderful? Anyway, this thing in his brain is meant to trigger his pleasure sensation. No wonder why he left it in for 2 years. He's all alone on the space station. No Cardassians to turn to, especially Cardassian women. And since the Cardassian boy wasn't in his future, he had the pleasure of himself, I guess. So turn this thing on and keep getting pleasure. Somehow I don't think that's what it really meant, because obviously it was about to kill him. So what do? They get it out, of course. And yeah, you're just going to have to watch this episode, because this is one, I don't know. When it came to Garak, like when he blows his own station up, it's just kind of like, it's bull, it's silly. So let's go on to the next one. This is number 23, and this is called Crossover. And for those of you who have listened to the show more than once and heard my thoughts on Mirror episodes, you may want to skip past this one.
In the deepest corner of the universe...
What happened to the station?
...lies a window to the dark side.
I'm Kira Nerys. That makes
takes two of us.
Crossing over can be dangerous.
She'll never let you go. You've got to help me.
I can't. They'll kill me.
Crossing back can be deadly.
You want to set an example, Garak? Use him. Let him die.
On the next Star Trek Deep Space Nine.
What can I say? It's a mirror episode. I hate it because I hate mirror episodes, and that's all I'm going to say about it. Next, let's go on to number 24, The Collaborator. I know you want to hear more about the past one, but I can't. I just can't. I'm sorry.
He wants to become Bajor's leader.
You are destined to be the next Kai.
And Kira has fallen for him.
I love Emoto.
Now, an accusation from the past.
He worked for the Cardassians!
Puts his fate in her hands.
Do you want to risk having a collaborator as the next Kai?
He is not a collaborator.
Is Kira's lover a traitor?
I trusted you.
She's gonna destroy you.
On the next Star Trek Deep Space Nine.
Oh, that's funny that Fede Quinn is talking about Cardassian collaborators, considering how she was in the last season of Deep Space Nine with Gul Dukat. Who no one could figure out was actually Dukat. And he was on the space station as well. I don't know. I just have to believe that if I saw him at the Replimat or I saw him on the turbo lift and he happened to open his mouth and say something, I think I would have figured out that was Dukat quickly. But anyway, this is about the collaborator, and of course we all know Wynn had something to do with this to make it look like Baral was not the right one to become Kai. Even though, well, he should have, but he didn't. And we all know who becomes the next Kai. Kai Crazy Nut Job, to be more accurate. So let's go on to the next one. This is called Tribunal. Episode number 25.
Imprisoned for a crime he didn't commit.
Would you care to make a confession?
In a world where truth means nothing.
What am I being charged with?
No need to worry about that.
And even an innocent man.
Your husband's verdict has already been determined.
Can be found guilty.
His execution is scheduled for next week.
O'Brien is on trial for his life.
I am not guilty. I have committed no crime.
The sentence is death.
On the next Star Trek Deep Space Nine.
And no one could still tell him to this day what he was being accused of. My guess is the Setlick 3 thing that, you know, the minstrel boy to the war has gone in the ranks of death. He will find him. His father's sword that he'd get it on. I don't know. But my guess is the Cardassians were still coming after him for Setlick 3. And so they get some guy who's supposedly his buddy from the Excalibur, or whatever, the Rutledge, maybe, and he says, "It's me, Miles O'Brien," and with that, the guy was able to manipulate things to make it look like Miles did something wrong, but of course, he wouldn't tell him what. Oh, just don't worry about that. I mean, can you imagine sitting in jail and being told by your lawyer, "Hey, don't worry about it. It doesn't matter what you're being accused of. You're guilty. So just go ahead and roll with the punches and just let it go and die in peace." That's pretty much what the lawyer was like for Miles O'Brien. And now we come into the final episode of the season, number 26. This is called The Gem Hadar, and these boys are not gems, I must say. Although I never saw a woman gem, I don't.
They come from the other side of the galaxy.
The Dominion will no longer stand by and allow ships from your side to violate our territory.
They come with a lethal force.
No one ever escapes from the Gemadar.
They come to conquer.
Commander Sisko will serve as an example of what happens to anyone who interferes with the Dominion.
Now the Federation faces its deadliest enemy.
You have no idea what's begun here.
On the next Star Trek Deep Space Nine.
Okay, so Commander Sisko sees that Jake is a little bit down as he's trying to plant something, and he asks him, "If it's one thing you could do in your life, what would it be?" "Oh, I don't know, go to the Gamma Quadrant?" "So they do, and what would you like to do there?" "Oh, how about we find a crazy nut job race who's going to try and take over our universe? What do you think, Dad? Is that good?" "Sure, son, let's go. Let's get hopping a runabout and let's take off." And that's just what they do. So they're on this planet, sitting by the campfire, singing Kumbaya, or maybe it was Row, 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 Row Your Boat. And the Gem Hadar come at them because they're invisible. and they try to kill them, and here we are. They're in the Ring of Light, sitting there going,
what are we going to do now?
And do they get out? Of course they do, because they're the Federation's best. And the Jem'Hadar now know where they are, who they are. The Dominion start coming in after them, and there you go. That's how the whole Dominion War started, and 4 seasons later, or was it 5 seasons later, we defeat the Dominion after the loss of life of countless thousands of people, all because little Jake wanted to go to the Delta Quadrant and see what was out there. Well, now you found out. And that, my friends, brings us to the end of this episode. I'm not going to go into any of the other things because I'm at over an hour, and I don't think it would be right. Yeah, I don't want to keep you this much longer. So I hope you enjoyed this tonight. I had no idea that I was going to have to do this. So whenever that happens, as I said, I just take a season of Star Trek, one of the series, and I roll with it. Or I take an episode. Next time, maybe I'll find one of my funnier episodes, and I'll talk about it, because, you know, maybe I'll be a little more alert. My throat will feel better. My voice will sound better. And but at least ain't as bad as my wife. I had to take her to the hospital 3 days ago with pneumonia. Went to see the doctor. Pneumonia on her right lung, both front and back. Poor woman. I could see the look on his face. It said she needs to be seen. But we said, no, let's try a prescription. I go out of the room while he ends up talking to her, doing the chest x-ray. And she comes out and says, here's his phone number. And, of course, no, my doctor wasn't hitting on my wife. It was, if it gets worse. And that pretty much told me, when you get the doctor's cell phone number, that he's a little concerned. So that's when we decided she needed to have it looked at, and we did. So she was in for 2 days. She's feeling a little better. Me, on the other hand, I've got something, and I hope it doesn't turn into pneumonia myself, because we can't afford it. So anyway, I want to thank you very much for downloading and listening to tonight's show. And Brian, I hope you are feeling better, depending on what it was. If it was World of Warcraft, I'm going to kick your ass next time I see you. If not, we'll talk to you next week. Everybody, thanks for dealing with me tonight, staying with me. If you made it this far, we love you. And good night.